New York Times bestselling author Neil Pasricha has a new book out called You Are Awesome. That's the title. Pasricha worked in the business world at Procter & Gamble and Walmart before turning his attention to the study of happiness. And in his new book, he says a key part of happiness is learning how to deal with failure. Neil, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy.
And who are you talking to in this book?
I'm talking to myself. I'm talking to my kids. I'm talking to anyone out there who has thin skin, who feels a little bit more anxious than they should. Considering we live in the greatest time ever to be alive, why are we feeling so fragile and frail? I'm talking to people that think that way, and I know I'm one of those people.
And why do you think we are?
Well, we grew up, you know, in the 80s getting gold stars, participation ribbons. You can press a button these days and the car whisks you home. You have takeout waiting on your front porch. Your cell phone entertains you. We live like kings. But the side effect of living like that is that we no longer have the tools to handle failure or even perceived failure. And our cell phones feed us an endless list of people who are better than us, better looking than us, have more friends than us, have more followers than us. If you get 2 likes on your photos, of course you feel like you got no friends. If your boss sends you a rude email, of course you feel like, you know, I got to call in sick. I can't handle this kind of pain. We have a fragility problem today.
Well, and you start the book with a story about your mom in Nairobi, Kenya, and how her early life was a series of setbacks that could have stopped her but didn't.
Mm-hmm. She was born the fifth girl in a family of 8, praying for a 4th boy in East Africa, which of course gives the boys the resources, the money for education and so on. She was ushered into an arranged marriage to a guy she met once before, who then flung her across the ocean to North America, where they settled in a town where she knew nobody. And throughout this experience, as she told me as I was growing up, whether he was taking her to, you know, the local German pavilion to do ballroom dancing, or whether he was taking her to a barbecue and she never ate meat before, but suddenly all there is burgers and hot dogs. She just added the word yet to her mentality. So the idea was, I don't ballroom dance yet, or I don't eat meat yet. And as she told me these stories when I was a kid, it stuck with me as an adult because I realized most of us talk in this way, where we talk to ourselves with a period at the end of the sentence. Your pitch gets rejected, you think, I'm not creative. Your doctor gives you a health test back and then you got bad cholesterol. You think, I don't take care of myself. You go to law school because it's, you know, where you got in. You think, I don't have any other options, right? No offense to the lawyers out there. But I just say that because if you just rephrase those thoughts as, I'm not creative yet. I don't take care of myself yet. I don't have any other options yet. What you're doing is what I call resilience. You are seeing the tiny sliver of light that exists right between the door and the frame just after you hear the latch click. I think resilience is this muscle that we all need to build, and just this mentality of letting the future possibility maybe include a yet helps us get there a little bit.
Well, and you say in this book, we're born with endless possibilities and we die with none, and we need to keep those options, those possibilities open as long as possible, which is against our preference.
Yes, exactly. The world these days is trying to specialize us. Look, how many people have been put, or their parents, there are parents putting their kids in like cello lessons when they're 6 or whatever like that. You know, the discipline right now is to study as hard as possible in one specific thing, because how are you going to succeed or do well in this world when everybody else is so super specialized and everybody's going to have more skills than you are if you don't go deep in one area? But while researching this book, I came across an amazing study that showed Nobel Prize winners actually are 22 times more likely than their scientist peers to actually have a totally unrelated hobby outside their scientific profession, meaning that they're also glass blowing on the side or starring in the local town play, or they're playing a sport that they're not very good at. Having these other hobbies or weird experiences or weird hobbies, as I like to call them, actually makes us more mentally tough. Our learning rate is the steepest when we know the least about it. But as adults, so many of us get fragile because we end up staying down one path. As you said, we need to keep our options open. And the way to do that is always have a weird hobby. Be trying new things all the time.
So you have a number of secrets, as you call them, in this book that you are imparting on the readers. And one of them is that you should tell yourself a different story. What do you mean by that?
So this takes me back to grade 9 gym class, a place that many of us probably don't want to revisit. I remember once my gym teacher, like this kind of big, burly, sort of Eastern European bodybuilder guy, he was telling this story in front of the whole room of 30 grade 9 boys. And he says, you know, one time I was wrestling this guy in a tournament and I actually squished the guy's testicle. And the whole room groaned and was like, oh, man. And then he says, yeah, after that, we all called him half a man. And the room just erupted in laughs and cheers. This is the best joke of the semester from this guy.
Not for you, though.
Not for me at that moment, Jeremy. I just realized, I'm like, that's me. He's talking about me. I never realized you're supposed to have two. You have one nose, you got one heart, you got one stomach. This made sense to me. I was filled with an extremely deep sense of shame. And as I was researching this book on resilience, what I realized is so many of us do that. I was telling myself all kinds of stories, Jeremy. I was saying, I'm unlovable. I'll never get married. I'm disfigured. I won't have kids. I'll have a high-pitched voice. I can't play contact sports. We all do this. You fail biology, you tell yourself, I failed my parents. You're an alcoholic, you tell yourself, nobody trusts me. Part of developing resilience is learning to tell yourself a different story. Okay, you have to husk away all the like things you've lacquered on top of the core objective truth and learn to peel them away. I say there's three questions to doing that. Number one is, will this matter on my deathbed? Number two is, can I do something about this? If you can, great. If you can't, well, you can. So you have to move on. And number three is this a story I'm telling myself? Again, can you separate the fact from the stories you're telling yourself? These three things are very important because in order to develop resilience, we need to figure out what's true and what is just a lie that we're telling ourselves.
Well, and I guess the other part of that is that we have more control over the situation than we think we do.
Absolutely. Here's the thing. Right now, if you are alive in the world today, you are probably spending a lot of time on the internet, right? What does the internet tell you? I always say there's three problems. They all start with letter P. There are productivity problems. You aren't getting anything done because you're bookmarking, prioritizing, and switching between tasks. There's a psychological problem because you're comparing everybody else's greatest hits to with your director's cut life. And there's a physiological problem. You're looking at bright screens before bed. That reduces melatonin. You don't sleep as well. And guess what happens in the morning, Jeremy? You have lower resilience because you didn't have a deep sleep. People these days are always talking about intermittent fasting, you know, don't eat between dinner and breakfast. Try to stay off of food. It helps your body. What I think we are in desperate need of today is an intermittent fasting every day on technology.
Well, and we spoke with an author recently who's got a book out called Digital Minimalism about exactly that.
Yes.
And basically he's a professor as well and got his students to give up devices for 30 days. And apparently for the first 2 weeks – it was extremely difficult for them. But after that, they start to realize all the other things they're getting done in that time.
Yeah, this is very similar. So Cal Newport, a great guy,
right.
and you Are Awesome, I write about something I call untouchable days. And I wrote this independently of Cal. So in You Are Awesome, Chapter 8, I call them untouchable days. One day a week, would you believe I'm completely untethered? My wife doesn't know where I am. I have no internet access on my computer. And guess what, Jeremy? In those days, that's where I get all my writing done. That's where I can actually produce the podcast that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a 10x output increase in my creative work. Sometimes people say to me, oh, Neil, it's so nice that you can do that, but I can't. I'm a nurse or I'm taking care of someone super busy. And I say, but could you take an untouchable lunch? Could you just leave your cell phone at your desk for an hour and maybe go for a walk? We know if you can do that, you reset your body and your strength in your mind goes up. That's why it's such a big part of my book.
So why do you think so few people actually do that?
Well, technology is very seductive and very addictive, okay? Look, if you drank a bottle of wine right before you went to bed, and if you woke up and drank a bottle of wine and you slept with a bottle of wine, we'd probably call you an alcoholic. But right now, if I'm in a room of people and I say, how many people sleep with their cell phone within 5 feet of their heads when they're sleeping? Every single hand, pretty right. much, like 99% of people, put their hand up. When everyone has an addiction, it is more difficult to see. And so we all have NDD right now, nature deficit disorder. And a big part of this lowering of our mental resilience is because we're endlessly comparing ourselves to people that are better than us. No matter how good the lunch you and I have together today, somebody's at a lobster buffet in the Maldives, right? On Instagram. So you are in a permanent state of anxiety because you can't win anymore.
Neil Pasricha, this book is a result of a lot of the things you've learned in your career and your life. Did you learn anything new while you were writing this book? Because this is not the first book that you've written even about awesomeness. So you've written The Happiness Equation. You've written The Book of Awesome. Now this is You Are Awesome. What did you learn?
One of the biggest takeaways I found in the research was something called the end of history illusion. You know, one of my jobs when I was at Walmart, Jeremy, was actually I had to help people get fired. I had to help them walk to their trunk and pack up their boxes. It was a terrible job. And they'd always say to me the same thing, which is, what am I going to do now? I'll never find anything. My life is over. When I'd bump into those people 5 years later, they'd say, guess what? Getting fired was the best thing that ever happened to me. I started a new business that I'd always been dreaming about. I got to spend time with my daughter after she had her miscarriage. I got to go visit my parents in our home country of Peru. Whatever it was, they had repositioned it in their mind. I didn't make sense of that until I read a study called The End of History Illusion. It turns out, from a resilience standpoint, we all catastrophize. We think where we are today is where we're going to be forever. Unfortunately, if that means if you lost your job or you got dumped or something went bad, you think you're stuck there. Mm-hmm. But use the end of history illusion to actually reimagine that this could be a step towards a future that you just can't see yet.
That is Neil Pasricha, whose new book, You Are Awesome, How to Navigate Change, Wrestle with Failure, and Live an Intentional Life. Neil, thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And you can read an excerpt from the book at hereandnow.org and then take a little break from your screen. You'll like it.